Hello, and welcome to episode 303 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So, M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, we'll start with you this week.
Hello, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and you can find me on Twitter at Amy Coney Barrett. I'm kidding. You can find me on Twitter at Hey Dude Meg.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy and not affiliated with at Joey Moser 83. Sorry, inside joke. Hi, guys.
Hi.
How are you guys?
I'm good. I think so. I think I'm good.
Only six days until we don't know who wins the presidential election.
I have a question. Sorry.
Okay.
I saw what was it? Wisconsin was blocked from extending the voting. And I just tweeted about this, so forgive me if this is repetitive. But North Carolina was allowed to count ballots for 9 days as long as it's postmarked before the election day. But isn't North Carolina definitely going to go red and Wisconsin is more of a battleground state? Like, why are... Like, isn't that scary?
Now, the most recent polls for North Carolina have trended more blue.
Oh, good. Okay.
Although it's impossible to say North Carolina could go either way. I mean, it is truly a coin toss. That's why I've been inundated with, I mean, obviously I'm a registered Democrat, but I've been inundated with phone calls from people trying to get me to get out the vote, to participate in things. And I finally agreed just to sign up for something this weekend. But, it's very close, and I can't answer your question. I haven't really read. I mean, obviously, I've heard the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling that was written by Kavanaugh was riddled with errors. I have not done the analysis to try to figure out why it's okay for North Carolina and it's not okay for Wisconsin.
Like, why don't they just give like a countrywide certain days? I don't know.
By the way, I signed up to help too, and I'm kind of annoyed because I'm supposed to work. Well, I signed up to be a poll worker for Election Day, and I did a training on Saturday, and it was just like basically like this is what this person does, this is what this person does, and I was just like, okay, this isn't like helping me at all. And then they're like, even if you take this training, you might not get picked. And I'm just like, okay,
what?
Like this wasn't even. Yeah, they're like, this isn't even the official training. This is just like a meeting, and I'm like, okay.
This is just so, can you win?
They had another meeting yesterday morning, and I'm like, it was like virtually the same thing from Saturday. I'm like, I'm not doing this. Like, tell me if I'm like, this is stupid. Like, it was a waste of time. So I was a little annoyed with that because I really wanted to help out. But then they said like, oh, we're inundated. I'm just like, okay, then don't use me. I think it's like if our backup and our backup person falls through, they'll take me to the prom. So I'm waiting on that. Also, by the way, if Trump wins, I may renounce religion. I may renounce all religion because I don't think there's a God. Let's happen. I've been thinking about this. There might not be a God.
God has been dead for a long time.
I don't know. I picture it being like some sort of like very like introspective film that I, you know, like that movie. What was that movie with like Aiden? It's Courtney Cox and Aiden. What is his name? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about? Oh god!
Where he like tries to break all of the Ten Commandments.
The Ten.
Well,
no, that's a different one. Courtney.
I don't know. You lost me at introspective and Courtney Cox. I was very confused
Aiden
as to what
Quinn.
Was coming.
Aiden Quinn. It's called Commandments, and it's about this like romantic drama where he like. It doesn't believe in God anymore, and he's like breaking all the commandments. Maybe I'll go on my own little like that'll be my 2021 resolution.
Breaking all the commandments.
So does that mean you're gonna start with like thou shalt not kill? I mean, I feel like you should do that.
Kill should be last.
I feel like kill should be first, so you can do it in 2020, so no one bats an eye.
But then I'd go to jail after that, so then I won't be able to do the other things. Behind bars makes it a little harder.
You just have to be good at it, so you don't get caught.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Clarence has four bodies in his freezer right now.
Okay. Anyway.
We're all terrified.
I did tell them that I would not do anything in person because I'm not going to go and start knocking on doors and getting people in my face and not wearing masks. And
seriously, it's dangerous now. Like, it was dangerous in 2008 when I was doing this for Obama, like knocking on doors and stuff. But now it's like, you could really get killed. Like, people are stocking up on guns right now. I heard that like more people are buying guns now than ever. Like,
oh, they're getting ready for the Civil War.
Yeah, it's like a Civil War. Like,
Civil War 3.
Yeah. Electric Boogaloo, as my friend says.
But this night on this podcast, we are not going to talk about politics anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about fun things to try to get our minds off of the next 6 days. And that includes Halloween, which I think is going to be the weirdest Halloween ever because it's on a Saturday night and it's a blue moon and the time changes right after it. So, and in my neighborhood, like, these teenage kids are roaming all over the neighborhood in packs and they're slicing open pumpkins and dumping pumpkins in fountains and, you know, cutting inflatables, and they're just going nuts. Stealing yard equipment and throwing it in the rivers, and it's insane right now. Anyway, so yes, we're going to talk about things that you can watch to help get you in the mood for Halloween, whether you're I think the things that we're going to talk about the most are more on the funny side of Halloween. I do want to offer up a couple of scary new things that will drop at the end of the week. But so we're going to talk about Halloween movies this week on the Water Cooler podcast. And I think we're going to talk about Borat 2, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Or are we saving that?
We could save that for something else.
I don't know, Joey. What do you think?
Let's do it. I watched it.
Congratulations. And I think that we can also talk about, if we're going to talk about movies, we can also talk about Sound of Metal, because I just watched that last night. And I think.
I loved it. Yeah.
All right, so let's get things started. We will save Halloween for the end, and let's start with two new movies. One is out and available right now, which is Borat Subsequent Movie Film, and the other is Sound of Metal, which stars Riz Ahmed, and will be available, I think, in December? Question mark?
I think so.
I think so, yeah.
That will also be an Amazon film, I believe. Question mark. Should have known that. So let's start with Borat. Obviously, Borat is I don't know how much introduction this film needs, considering how much has been written about it in the past week. Borat, Subsequent Movie Film, is the sequel to the early 2000 film Borat, which stars Sacha Baron Cohen as in basically makeup as fictitious news reporter from Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan. Which one?
Yes, Kazakhstan.
Who journeys to America to learn about American culture. In the original film, it was more, there was more of a focus, because he was an unknown entity at that time, there was more of a focus on interviewing real people and basically catching conservatives, Republicans, white people in racist and questionable behavior. Borat's Subsequent Movie Film introduces a secondary character who plays his daughter, who travels to America to be given to Trump as an offering from the Kazakhstan government. So there's a lot more scripted comedy over the in-person comedy. I mean, there's certainly some of that. There's sort of candid camera-esque comedy. But very quickly in the film, you see that people recognize him. So he knew that he could not do an extensive amount of that. So they have a lot more scripted material between him and the actress playing his daughter. So I will let Megan, you start first, because I know you were a huge fan of this and of the actress playing his daughter. So why don't you talk about your reactions?
Yeah, I was not looking forward to seeing this when I first heard that they were doing it, because I thought that the first Borat was fine. It was funny, but it wasn't like, I don't know. I felt like it was something I'd watch once and not watch again. And I think it's because it's, you know, the frat boys kind of took on its phrases like Varina is my wife. You know, it became such a, you know, obnoxious thing, kind of like Napoleon Dynamite, I would say, with the like, gosh. But I also think it was a mean-spirited movie. The first one, I felt like it was, you know, mean to people who were not American and, you know, kind of, it made Americans look stupid, but it was more kind of like, isn't it crazy that he's doing these things and he's talks like this? But this one was just so, I thought it was really refreshing. I saw some people say that it was like not as good as the first one. I actually prefer this one to the first one. I like this one much better. And I think it's because it's poking fun at Americans, which I think we deserve. And I'm here for it. And I also like the addition of Maria Bakalova, because she's just one, for one thing, the whole thing hinges on her, I think, because if she's not good, you're going to know it, because you've got to match him, who's like a comedic genius. Like, he really is. And so I just felt like they had they had chemistry as a father daughter duo. I also think that it actually had a plot. Like, before, I think it was just, the first one was just Borat, like, trying to bang Pamela Anderson, right? Like, I think that was it. But this one had a plot and everything. I just was kind of blown away by it. I actually watched it Friday night, and then I watched it on Sunday with my mother, who loved it too. And, I just think it's really great. And, I know some people too are saying that it shouldn't be up for, script because, or even for her, because it's not scripted, but I think this one was more scripted than the other one, but I also think that's just so, I mean, oh, I think you should reward that. Like, it's impressive, I think. So I really enjoyed it.
Joey?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Megan said. I sort of wasn't looking forward to it because I think Borat's really annoying. Well, maybe it's the frat boys that Megan mentioned. I agree with them. Just like, would you do in the movie when they like sort of chase him down? You know, they're like, Borat, it's Borat. And I was like, oh my God, you guys were around in 2006. What the fuck? But yeah, I think she's amazing. I got like really like angry and frustrated at a lot of the people. Like the I can't remember what part of the movie it is, but you know, it's just a lot of, you know, Republican versus Democrat stuff. Like the part where he's in the cabin with them you know, they're like, what's worse, this coronavirus or the Democrats? They're like, Democrats. I was like, oh, shut up. Like, yeah, but I agree. I think she's amazing. I think it's bullshit that people are like, she shouldn't be, you know, eligible for stuff because it's not a scripted thing. But it's like, well, improv is hard as fuck. So you probably can't do it, whoever's saying that. I liked it. I think I like it more than the first one.
Yeah, they definitely, well, Borat has a legacy with the Academy. It was nominated. The original film was nominated for Best Screenplay, Best Adapted Screenplay. So there's a precedent that it could be nominated. She and Sacha Baron Cohen do not miss a beat in any of their sequences. And, you know, I know some of it's probably, you know, some people are in on the joke more so than we know. But, you know, they are not memorizing a script because they do have to react to the person around them. And so it is very challenging to do that. And I think, you know, they carry it off seamlessly. Did I find this movie as funny as the first one? I think I made a mistake by watching the first one just before I watched the sequel. So that it felt very repetitive. A lot of the same gags that he uses are used in the first film. And so I think it diminished returns for me just a small amount.
What about Johnny the Monkey? He's not in the first one, is he?
Horrifying.
I love Johnny the Monkey.
It immediately took me out of the film for 15 minutes when she ate him.
I know. She was hungry.
Horrible.
She was in a crate. What was she supposed to do?
She was hungry.
And I got tired. I did get a little tired of the running jokes about women can't get in cars, women can't drive, women can't read. you know, it was just, it just was.
But I feel like so much of the first one was about that, like was about him being like, you know, women can't do these. This was almost like him taking that back. I don't know. I really liked it. I thought it was funnier actually than the first one, maybe because it just made more sense to me. Although it didn't have the naked wrestling scene, which is classic.
Oh, thank God.
But I love that scene.
I think it gets better as it becomes like it becomes more, it gets more focused on political things.
Yeah.
Toward the end, it was that. And then there's the Rudy Giuliani scene, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in some detail.
It's kind of a miracle of a movie, though, because if like he was working on this right before the pandemic and then he kind of had to pivot, right?
Right.
And so like he had released this because the whole point was that he wanted to, you know, have it be political. It had to come out. So he was probably like, I did all this work and now the pandemic's going to shut everything down. Like, I just feel like it's a miracle it even came out.
I saw something that I might have seen on IMDb that he said that Sacha Baron Cohen felt like he could have actually been seriously hurt because of, you know, people being, I can't find it now, but it, like people are, he was saying that it felt way more dangerous because of, oh yeah, more dangerous because of situations due to the COVID-19 pandemic and various political protests. He said there were two separate occasions in which he had to wear a bulletproof vest.
Wow.
Which is nuts. Like some of the stuff, it just also makes me angry. Maybe that's why I kind of liked it, because it sort of immediately made me laugh after some of the like horrible stuff, like when Pence is on stage and he was when he's talking about how there's only like what, like a certain number of cases, and he was like, and we're ready. I was like, we're still not ready. So I think maybe the humor sort of like eased those like wounds a little bit. So maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's why I found it funnier.
Yeah, there absolutely is something to that. So the Rudy Giuliani scene, that's the thing that made it super famous going into this weekend. And I think, a lot of people watched it because of that. What do you guys think of that?
I do think he was tucking in his shirt.
I do too.
I do too.
And I think the creepiest part is that he went into the hotel, into the bedroom with her. I think that's creepier.
And he apparently asked for her or wanted to exchange phone numbers with her. But my problem with the scene is they're very obviously, there's something that happened between them going in the bedroom, which again is not appropriate. That was completely wrong on his behalf, on his part. And then the part where they started showing you what was happening in that room, which is where he said, let me get your phone number. And you don't know what she said to him to get that. I mean, she may have been saying, I'd really like to work for you. And he's like, okay, let me get your phone number. You know, you just don't know.
Right.
But I know a lot of people have said, I don't lay down on my bed to tuck in my shirt. Well, you're also not a 75 plus year old man who is overweight, you know, who is sitting on a bed and his shirt has been removed by her or taken up by her. You probably would lay down to tuck in your shirt. I don't think he was reaching his pants to go and
I don't think he was either, but I do think the whole situation was creepy.
I think it was, the whole situation was inappropriate. I just don't think he was going that far.
I don't know what he was doing, I guess. But I do think he was tucking in the shirt, but I don't know. Yeah, I guess you're right. It is editing. We don't know. I don't know. But I was scared for her.
Yes. I almost wish Sacha Baron Cohen had let it go on just another 2 minutes.
He's like, she's 15. And then he's like, take me instead.
But anyway, you know, if she's going to be in the awards conversation, a critics group or two are going to have to bring her back. They're going to have to give her an award for outstanding supporting actress. She's going to have to be nominated at the Golden Globes. Those are the things that will have to happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to predict it right now. I bet New York Film Critics Circle is going to do it, because they always do some really fun.
They do some weird stuff.
Like, I just saw, well, it wasn't New York, but L.A. awarded Angelica Houston Best Actress for The Witches and The Grifters, but also The Witches. And New York Film Critics, I think, gave a supporting actress to Tiffany Haddish for Girl Strip, and that should have happened. So let it happen.
All right. Anything else on Borat?
No.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about The Sound of Metal. Megan, why don't you introduce us to The Sound of Metal?
Sure. So Sound of Metal is stars Riz Ahmed as Ruben Stone, who is this metal drummer in this like two-person band, him and his girlfriend Lou, played by Olivia Cooke. And they kind of just are, I'd say like they kind of have a gypsy type of life. But he soon discovers that he's losing his hearing, and he's trying to navigate that world, the world of his current life, and, you know, maybe learning how to deal with his loss of hearing. And also he's an addict. So he's dealing with, you know, the kind of desire to get back into those old habits. It's really like a character study, and it's kind of more of what I wished like something Bohemian Rhapsody would have been, a little more thoughtful with its approach to it, because I think this is, I think you learn so much more about this character in 2 hours than you do sitting with Rami Malek's Freddie Mercury. But it's directed by Darius Marder, and it's also, he wrote the screenplay too, and the story was by Derek Cianfrance, which I was like, oh, I feel like this could have been a possibly like a Ryan Gosling type of role at some point. I don't know how you feel about that, but I really, really liked it. It just held my attention the whole time. I think that this one, best actor, Riz Ahmed, we got to start talking about that, but also best supporting actor for Paul Raci. I think he's incredible in this. And he's an actor who's been in the business for like ever. I mean, he's been in so many things, and he's, he really is deaf in real life. And so I feel like that would be such a cool thing to have him, you know, be nominated and represent that. It could be such a cool, so many cool nominations this year, but that was one that I was really excited at the possibility of.
Yeah, he is very good. He's such a calming presence. He's not a, I mean, that character is a bit of a stereotype in recovery film movies. But he gives it such a new and nuanced touch with his performance. It's not anything like I've seen in that situation before.
Yeah, and he has a great scene, and his last scene in it is really fantastic, I think.
Oh yeah, when he, and we don't want to spoil anything, of course, but when that he makes that sigh after the person he's been talking to has left the room, as if he was just dreading that moment, and he's finally over, and he just feels awful, but it's what he needed to do. That was just a subtle, wonderful touch.
Yeah. He's
Jerry, what did you think?
Oh, I loved it. I'll admit that I wasn't really looking forward to it when I started it. I was like, oh, it's like 2 hours and 10 minutes. Like, I don't know what this movie is really. I didn't know very much about it. I hadn't really seen a trailer. I think Riz Ahmed is incredible. I think he's probably my current pick, my current personal pick for best actor. And I told Megan this, that, you know, every year they talk about how, you know, people of color are usually left out of the conversation of acting, you know, awards, especially at the Oscars. And when they are included, it's a performance where it hinges on their race or pain of their race or something they're going through because of their race. Riz Ahmed is not a white person, and this is a movie that is not about the color of his skin. It's not about his, you know, someone hurting him because he's not a white person. So I really also just want him to get in an Oscar nomination for that. This is like a movie, if this would have come out in like the 90s, this is like Academy Awards circle jerk material here, guys. It's like he learned sign language for it. He learned the drums to do it. Like, this is something that, like, quote unquote, Academy Award winning dreams are made of. And I just think he gives the movie so many layers. He gives it, it's really sad. His loneliness, I feel like, just permeates through the movie. Like, I kept thinking the whole time, like, what would I do if I was there and I couldn't use one of my senses and I didn't know anything? Like, it's sort of like he's adrift in a world that he doesn't know. And I think we won't talk about anything, obviously, that's spoilery, but that last scene is one of my favorite scenes of the entire year.
I would argue that he was adrift in the world before he went deaf, too. And I think that's interesting. But I mean, yeah, but I think, no, I know what you mean, though. But I think that's what I kept thinking about. He's always, like, you know, punk rock metal's about being an outsider. Mm-hmm. And I just find it interesting that, like, okay, you're really an outsider now. And it's like, you know, this is usually what people, you know, he's nearly crumbles from being an outsider. I mean, who wouldn't? But I was going to say something else about, I can't remember now. Oh, sound editing. We need to talk about sound editing.
Because
it has got to get nominated.
Well, I'm a little annoyed that this is the year that they're combining the sound categories.
Yeah.
Again. It's so obnoxious because it's going to be like five movies with guns.
Yeah.
but the sound is such a,
it's so important.
It's so important. Like the way that is calibrated throughout the movie. And it's so good.
Oh, I love so this good. Movie so much. I really, really love this movie.
The sound is really key to the film, obviously, because you hear how he hears the world, the muffled sounds. And then of course, mm-hmm. and then there's a point at which, he has a different sound. And so you hear tinniness and you really get the sense of what it's like to have, minor spoiler alert, cochlear implants. And it's just so key and critical. I do feel like films like this where sound is an integral part of the story, they still get nominated, even though it isn't sort of, you know, guns and shooting and wars and bombs and things like that. I would be surprised if this doesn't get nominated for sound. And I do think he should get nominated. It's kind of an unfortunate year because, you know, we're coming off of the heels of what I consider Anthony Hopkins' career best work in The Father. He's heartbreaking in it. And then you have Chadwick Boseman, who's supposed to be tremendous, who is now in the lead category for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. You know, Riz Ahmed is going to be, it's going to be tough for him to beat those two. But he's great, and I think he absolutely should get nominated. And actually, I think this is probably the best performance I've ever seen Olivia Cooke give, an actress who I find often very annoying.
I find her character really interesting, though, because I mean, I guess we could talk about it offline, but her character has a backstory that you don't really know about until the end of it. And you're like, wait a minute, this could have made everything different. Stupid bitch. But she has a really great moment with him. Their last scene together is really good.
It is. And she has a great moment too with where she's singing with the piano. A different take on her. I really liked it. I really liked the film. It was it took me by surprise. So it is premiering theatrically in whatever theaters are open on November the 20th, but it will be available to stream on Prime on December the 4th. Cool. So I'm sure we'll be talking about this as the year progresses.
I hope so. I hope we talk about it more.
Yeah. All right. Let's move off to our Halloween segment. So let's talk about the two films that we're going to offer up or at least discuss in terms of more family-friendly, funny-type Halloween shenanigans. Hubie Halloween from Netflix and HBO Max's The Witches. So, Joey, you wanted to present Hubie Halloween, so why don't you go ahead?
Sure. Hubie Halloween is the story of how Michael Chiklis is in this movie and nobody knows, and it's terrifying to the end.
I thought it was about an incel who wets the bed and is 50-something years old, living with the most amazing mother of all time, June Squibb, and who is doesn't deserve fucking Julie Bowen. Like, this – I'm sorry. I had a serious reaction to this movie because I kept thinking, okay, he's supposed to be this nice guy who's like the nicest guy in the world. I could not tell a thing he was saying most of the time. I'm so glad that I had closed captioning on because it's just like, which is basically just Waterboy only age 20 years. But the scene where he was like showing the sheets outside and then he wet the bed, I was just like, what?
Well, like, there's like, what? There's like an edge to this movie that I think is kind of, everyone has me to blame that they're listening to us talking about these movies because I wanted to talk about horror movies that aren't necessarily horror, but it's like this movie, I like family friendly horror that's like kind of spooky and I call it, I may have said this before, like CVS Halloween aisle, like family Halloween movies. I like it. But then there are certain things in this movie, probably because it's an Adam Sandler movie, like that, or the part where the woman, I think she's a nun or something, and she sees Julie Bowen drive away, and she was just like, I don't know about you, but that woman makes me horny. And I was like, why is that there? Like
that. Well, that woman was from Billy Madison, right? There are a lot of like throwbacks to Billy Madison in this. With see, the thing rules, is, the wet bed sheets.
So this belongs in the Billy Madison cinematic universe. That's what you're saying.
I think so. I'm not sure. But I realized that like, if you grew up watching Adam Sandler, which many men and women did, but young men that are now becoming incels, I would say, you are set up for expectations that you deserve hot women. You deserve women like, you know, Julie Bowen and who are all these other, like Drew Barrymore is, she's hot too. She doesn't deserve, well, she deserves Robbie Hart.
Jennifer like, Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston, Kate Beckinsale, like, some of the hottest women of all time. And Adam Sandler doesn't even put any like effort into what he wears in these movies. Like he doesn't like, I mean, he's fucking wetting the bed in this movie and he still gets the girl at the end. And I just keep thinking you're setting up all these men for expectations where they think they deserve to get a girl just because they're nice. And that's what this whole movie is about, is he's a nice guy and Julie Bowen is a nice girl, and that's why she likes him, even though he's a 55-year-old man who wets the bed, and they hint at he's never had sex and stuff. I'm like, she's really young? She's down for this? Like, I just think it's an incel movie. It's totally an incel movie.
This is the first Adam Sandler movie that I've ever seen that is not Punch Drunk Love.
And what?
Like, really?
I've never seen his
oeuvre.
Yeah, I've never seen like Billy Madison. I've never seen The Waterboy.
The Longest Yard.
No, didn't see that either.
Where he was married to Courtney Cox in that movie.
Yeah. So
what about you? Didn't see Uncut Gems where he was married to Idina Menzel?
I could not make it past the first 10 minutes of Uncut Gems.
You didn't see Grown Ups or Grown Ups 2 where he was married to Salma Hayek.
No, sure didn't.
What was that? What was that? It was like that 30 Rock joke where she's like, Salma Hayek says, Liz Lemon says something about her being like old, and she's like, old, like, do you want to see me naked? And she's like, yeah, kind of. Like, I feel like that's me too. Like, I'll see Salma Hayek naked. She's hot. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
this is not meant for me. Right.
Who is it meant for? That's
I don't
my other question.
I don't know. I don't know. But it had a lot of people in it. A lot of people that I like. I'm not sure what Julie Bowen is doing in it. I know she was in Billy Madison.
Yeah.
Right?
She was in Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore. Okay.
She was in Happy Gilmore?
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I literally think she's just standing talking. It's, I mean, I don't even think she's acting. Like,
no,
she's just there. She's not doing anything. Like the scene where she's in the where they're in the Salem Witch Museum, and she's just like, oh, here, I'm chaperoning my daughter's group, and I think she really was, and they just happened to be filming that day, and so she's just there. Like it's just terrible. It's not funny at all. Like
I didn't think it was funny either, and I thought it was just like. I kept thinking, is this for little kids? Is this for, what is this? Like, I just kept thinking, who's watching this?
This is for boys that want to seem like they're cool.
Incels.
So they want to watch it, but they really want to watch it because it's like a family movie.
It's just, he's grooming a whole new group of men that are going to think that they deserve women like Jessica Biel, another person that he was set up with in a movie. Like, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
Which
I actually did like that movie. Don't hate
that movie,
but
that movie fucking sucks. That
movie's it's not great. But it's just like I just feel like this is ridiculous. And this was kind of like, okay, you're not even trying to make like it just makes it's insulting to women that we would be like, yeah, I'm down with this. Like I'll clean your bed sheets for you. Like, no.
Yeah, it's just not good. It's just really not good, and it's not funny. But that's, I mean, again, I don't think it's made for me. So, again, I don't know who it's made for, but it certainly wasn't me. I don't think I have anything else to say about it.
Maybe Keith Raniere likes it. I bet he can watch it in prison.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel like he's just trying to keep Rob Schneider employed at this point.
Right.
Well, like, he's, like, keeping all of them employed, if you think about it. Like, you know, actually, the person I was most happy to see during this movie was Maya Rudolph.
I was, too, but then I was also sad, and I also was, like, thinking people were going to come for him. Like, I'm surprised people haven't said this, that, like, all of the people who tormented him were all mostly people of color. Did you notice that? I'm like, how did he...
Except for the kids.
The kids were people of color too. The mean kid who he worked with was a person of color, and then Maya Rudolph, Tim Meadows, but then Ray Liotta was the only one. But I was just kind of like, I was surprised that way. I'm like, that is bold and cancel culture, Adam Sandler.
I will say the one thing I did like for some reason, Noah Schnapp playing Julie Bowen's son and having that relationship, I kind of like that. I thought he was pretty good in it.
I actually was shocked that was him.
I was too. I was like, I know that kid from somewhere, and I had to Google it.
Wait, who's Noah Schnapp?
Stranger Things.
Oh, I didn't even recognize him.
He played Will Byers. He was the, Julie Bowen's son who wore the Tin Man costume.
He's the tall guy. Oh, my God.
And I was like, wait, I saw season 3. He's not, like, why does he look like that? And I was like,
I didn't recognize him. Yeah. I loved June Squibb, though.
Yeah.
Boner donor.
Well, I mean, there's that one scene that's so terrible where there was one funny joke. The funny joke about the female newscasters who were all dressed like Harley Quinn.
I didn't find that funny.
I thought it was funny.
Now this is making sense to me, though. I'm looking at the cast, and Julie Bowen's daughters in it were his daughters.
Yes.
Sadie and Sunny Sandler.
Ew.
So it's just kind of like... You know, let's give my kids some work.
But like, there's that scene where they're getting the Halloween parade ready in Salem, and she's interviewing the newscaster's interviewing, I think, the police chief or something like that.
Yeah.
And then his mom and her friend are there on the corner, but it's so obviously green screened. Like they're not even in the same place.
Well, the newscaster's his wife too, by the way. I forgot to mention that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She's always in his movies.
But the whole like boner donor thing and then him not knowing what boner was. I mean, come on. Like, how could he not know what the word boner meant? I mean, that's entirely.
That's why I'm like, right. That's why I'm like this. What in what world does this this beautiful woman who's like, why would she want to be with this guy? He's not even cool. Like, he's not even that nice, I didn't think.
It's just
kind of innocent and weird.
Yeah.
Megan, I'm going to buy you a boner donor shirt.
I actually would wear that.
Yes, you would.
It's like somebody made a comedy centered around Lenny from of Mice and Men.
That is. Can we put that on the poster?
All right. I would say I think we've talked about this enough, but we are going to talk about the witches next. So, The Witches on HBO Max. It was originally supposed to come out to theaters, but because of COVID, mercifully, this is the best thing to come out of COVID. It went straight to HBO Max. I know Joey is going to have a difference of opinion because Joey is less critical on this than I am, but this is an absolutely garbage, terrible movie that I wish I had never seen. It's directed by Robert Zemeckis with the worst CG I've ever seen in a finished film. and it is supposed to be more faithful to the novel than the 1990 version, which I did not see. It stars Anne Hathaway as the head of a coven of witches. Octavia Spencer is her foil, whose grandson and a couple of other children have been turned into mice because that's what witches do with children. And then they try to stomp them. I don't know. Why not just not poison the kids? Anyway. And a bunch of stuff goes on. And it's really... I'm sorry. I'm not even going to give it a full description because it's just the worst movie I've ever seen. It is so bad. So, Joey, I know you were kinder to it than I was. First of all, I'll just let you talk and then I'll get to the end. So, Joey...
I think it is absurd to a level that it is somewhat enjoyable just because I think Anne Hathaway is having a fun time. The accent is ridiculous. I just think it's kind of fun, but I'm a massive fan of the original, and the original one scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. And there's like, there's a lot that's like exactly the same, about it. But I think Angelica Houston is high camp. We should all just watch it again just for her. I just think it's kind of, it's just fine. It's fine. Also, wow, Clarence, you're really pulling for those pull quotes. Worst movie I've ever seen. Worst visual effects I've seen in a finished film.
Well, I am not
Awards Daily.
I am not a Rotten Tomato critic. I will say, I don't know if you thought of this or if somebody mentioned it to you, Joey, but you had mentioned to me that Anne Hathaway is going down the Nicolas Cage performance route. And I think this... Yeah. Very perfectly captures the spirit of what she's doing here. She is, it's a gonzo performance for sure.
Yeah, I remember when the trailer came out and I was messaging Kevin. We were tweeting. And he was just like, what is her accent? I was like, I don't know, Transylvanian, Pennsylvanian. And he was just like, it's bad. It's like, she's a witch. I don't know, like, what... I don't know what dialect she researched to do the part. I just think she's having a grand old time. Whatever.
Another thing that kind of horrified me was there's a message, and this is a spoiler. If no one wants to hear what happens at the end of The Witches, then please fast forward 2 minutes. It's in the book, too, which I did read that the book was... censored or banned in some libraries because of this, but the kids do not get changed back into humans. They remain mice. And there's a scene at the end where basically the kids, like his grandmother, again played by almost said Olivia Colman, Octavia Spencer. I don't know why. Played by Octavia Spencer, reminds him if you're going to stay a mouse, you're probably not going to live very long because mice don't live very long.
Oh,
and
God.
He goes, that's okay. I would not want to live without you. So I'd rather die at the same time that you die.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that is a horrible thing to say. That's like saying, hey kids, it's okay. Kill yourself. It's just fine. Die with grandma. Get buried with her. It's fine. I don't know.
They banned it for that.
They did. I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, some podunk library in Mississippi or Alabama, but there goes two states worth of listeners. But, I don't know. We've talked about this 5 minutes more than we should have, but it is, Megan, you miss nothing by not watching it.
I'm glad I've never seen the original either. So
watch it. I think the original's on Netflix. You can watch it. It's, I would say that the original is a lot better. I will say something that is positive to watch about it, sort of what I echoed when we talked about like Sound of Metal. But I like that the cast, the lead characters are predominantly Black characters.
Yeah.
So that's a nice thing to see. And it's not, I mean, it is set at a time where there would normally be a conversation about how one person is Black and one person is white. And they do mention it a couple of times where I think Octavia Spencer says something about her being Black, but it's just like, just make Black people the protagonists in your movies. See, it's like, just do it.
Well, it is written by Kenya Barris of Blackish right. fame. Is that right? Blackish. Yes.
Well, it's
Black-ish.
Him and
Guillermo del Toro and Robert.
Yeah. Which I heard that del Toro originally wanted it to be a stop motion animated movie, which I think would have been really cool. Also, just because we don't get a lot of stop motion animated movies, but that's a whole other story. It's fine. If you're drunk and need to see her do her be crazy, it's fine. You'll probably get bored and turn it off, but it's okay.
Put All that right. on the back of the
Yeah, exactly. Get drunk and it's okay.
It's fine.
It's fine. Just very quickly, I wanted to give a shout out to two more traditional Halloween films, two scary movies coming out this Friday, October 30th. One is on Netflix called His House. And it is a movie about, I think they're from the Sudan, African refugees.
Moving to, I saw that trailer. It looks so good.
Yeah, moving into London as immigrants. And they are put into temporary housing while they get processed or something. I can't remember exactly why they're put into temporary housing, but they're put into a temporary house that is haunted. And it's one of those films where the haunting is both emotional and physical. So it's incredibly well done. It's incredibly well directed. I highly recommend it. It's a very, very, very emotionally powerful film. Another one I saw was Spell, which also comes out on Friday. And this is a, it has, it's Omari Hardwick and, geez, hold on a second.
Is it Loretta Devine in that?
Yes, Loretta Devine. Thank you.
I love Loretta Devine.
And John Beasley. Omari Hardwick plays a man who grew up in Appalachia and bettered himself and became a what they call bougie Black man in the film. He finds out his father has passed. He flies his plane and the plane enters a lightning storm and crashes. And his family has been captured by Loretta Devine, who plays an evil witch doctor. And she plays it so well and so over the top. It's kind of like, imagine a Black Misery and you would have this film. I thought it was really good. Really, really good. Both of them were excellent. And I find it's really interesting if you look back over the past couple of years how the most critically acclaimed horror films are coming from the Black perspective. And I think that's really compelling that, you know, people are exploring their cultures through horror. It's really,
yeah.
I'm supposed to talk to the director tomorrow, I think. Probably should check that out. And it's one of the questions. Yes, I am. Tomorrow at 1. And it's something I want to explore with him. So anyway, those are two scary movies that I recommend. I don't know if either of you had ones that you would like to talk about, or we can move off to the flash forward.
I'm ready for the flash forward.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So let's move to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Megan, we'll let you go first.
So I have a screener for Fat Man that I'm excited to watch. The Mel Gibson Santa Claus movie. So I'm excited about that. And we'll see, you know, just looking forward to our last possible last weekend of democracy. I finally finished Defending Jacob. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Which I really liked it up until the last episode. I was kind of like, oh, that's it. I fucking hate Jacob. Like, I really fucking hate him.
The worst.
He's the worst.
He kills people.
That would be my quote for the, I fucking hate Jacob. But, yeah, so I need to finish some other shows, but yeah, probably just catching up on some things. But that was really excited about Fat Man.
Joey, what about you?
God, Fat Man. I made a list of all the movies I want to catch up on, and it is extensive. I still haven't seen Defy Bloods, and I still haven't seen Shirley. So those are the two movies I'm really going to, like, make myself watch. But in terms of television, I'm really excited that Superstore comes back on Thursday, the 28th, so tomorrow. And I'm excited to see how they... I mean, it's probably going to be one of the first... I mean, the first sitcom, at least. I know, like, This Is Us dealt with the pandemic. Some other shows have been, you know, were created during the pandemic, but this is one of the first, you know, comedies that's going to talk about essential workers and the pandemic head-on. So I'm excited for that.
Awesome. So I, too, am looking forward to the last couple of days, potentially, of our American democracy. But mostly I am looking forward to, as we are recording tomorrow night, my two most anticipated films of 2020, which are Minari and Mank. So I've got both of them tomorrow night. Friday night, I am seeing Nomadland. Trying to decide if I'm going to... I need to catch up on the Adele Saturday Night Live because I heard it actually wasn't that bad. And who's doing... Oh, John Mulaney is doing the Halloween show. So I might watch that. Because, I mean, I'll get an hour back of my life, so at least I can say I didn't waste an hour with Saturday Night Live.
I was going to say, I am not wasting any more hours on that show.
Yeah.
No, she's funny. I was surprised. I feel like I'm...
She looks like Kate Winslet.
She does.
Sarah Paulson.
No, Kate Winslet. I don't see Sarah Paulson at all.
I see that in the eyes. It's the eyes, I think, for me.
But the picture where she looked like Katy Perry, I thought she looked like Sarah Paulson there.
I don't know. I don't see Sarah Paulson. I'm kind of over Adele until she comes out with new music. I know that's wrong, but...
Well, I was really... I felt bad because there is a sketch where she's on The Bachelor, where it's her. She's not playing anybody. She's playing herself. And she just keeps bursting into song. And I was like, this is what I came here for. I was just like, this is what I...
I did see a clip of that.
And that one's a funny sketch, but I sort of felt bad. I was just like, everyone's freaking out over Adele singing Someone Like You, and like, her is the musical guest. I feel like if I was the musical guest, I'd be like, stop singing!
Yeah.
I don't know.
She hasn't come out with any new music, but I feel like I've been like overloaded with Adele news this year that I didn't need. Like, Chris Brown seen leaving her house late at night, like, didn't need to know that.
Like, and she's thin. Did you know she's thin? Right.
Yeah, like that whole thing. Like, I just feel like I need her to just go chill for a little bit. like, and come out with a new album, and then I'll be back.
Like, I mean, tell me when you're ready.
It's all about me, Adele.
Can she sing when she's thin?
Yeah. I'm surprised people haven't said, like, oh, good, she sounds the same.
Yeah.
Like her weight was the key to her talent? What the fuck is wrong with people?
I don't know. All right. So does that cover it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the hell out of here. But first, happy Halloween to all of our listeners. And thank you for listening. And we are the 3Ms. Contributors Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow, a very safe Halloween, and a urgent reminder for all of you to vote. Unless you're voting Republican, then stay home. Bye.